Hi everyone, I'm Heather, one of the Youth Services Librarians at Heartland's Cromaine Library, and today I'm here with Kelsey, our Teen Services Librarian, and Shelby, who works in our Community Relations Department. And we are going to talk about part four of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So today we're diving into part four of our Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark journey. And this section is Other Dangers. How are we feeling about other dangers?
This is, I remember being a kid, and obviously the other dangers section is supposed to be your more modern scares, like less ghosty and more axe murderer hiding in your house or something. Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid being very spooked by this section because it's so much more realistic, if you will, or more likely to happen to you, depending on your views of the paranormal. And I also just really liked it because it was so modern, it was a lot of situations that I've been in before, not like, oh, someone asked me to go sleep in a haunted house for a night, more like, there's a criminal on the loose and, you know, or you're alone in your house and something scary is happening. So I, as a little kid, was, I really enjoyed this part for its juicy scariness.
Yeah. Same. when I was reading, yeah, same, Shelby, good point. but when I was reading this, I found like a lot of pop culture kind of times, like these stories reminded me of a lot of things that like in the 90s were developed into movies or even other novels. So I could see, the kind of link between these stories and like other things that were developed in the meantime.
Oh yeah, lots of classic horror tropes, slasher tropes, movie tropes,
yes,
coming out in brief versions.
So as the intro, this section, we have our scarecrow guy. He is back and he has like an animal kind of foot going on. One is like super huge and it's got like really scaly, gross claws. And then he's got like a hand that has two twig-like, I don't know if they're fingers, they just kind of look like twigs to me.
Appendages?
Appendages,
weird,
yes.
Things hanging off.
Yeah, I don't know if he's turning into a tree or like what's going on, because like he's also got that animal foot going on. It almost feels like at the end of his animal foot, he's being like pulled back into the ground, or he's like hatching from the ground.
Emerging.
And he's got long, straggly hair, and he kind of looks like he's seeing a buddy, because he's almost like, hey, fam.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey.
I thought his
hands just
were
crawling
like
out of the earth here.
Yeah.
Very, yes. Creepy nightmare fuel, so thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yes, did you have a thought about his hands, Kelsey?
Yeah, I thought that they were kind of like plotting hands, you know?
Ooh,
like
rubbing over each
rubbing,
other.
Yeah, I'm doing this visually, but it's a podcast, so that's very silly of me. But like, I thought of him like wringing his hands, I think is what they call it. Like,
yeah,
like he's hatching a plan, rubbing them together.
I'm going to sneak into this house while the babysitter's there. Nah-ha-ha.
Yeah. I'm
and
so excited about my plots.
Yeah, and now that I'm thinking about it too, like if he is like emerging from the grass, it almost looks like he's taking a breath, like he just kind of climbed and he's like, instead of saying,
oh,
hey girl, hey.
Oh, I don't like it. You guys
are welcome.
Fan on these images and make them so freaky.
Haunting your dreams forever. So our other danger section, we learn that the stories in this part of the book have been passed down over the years. But the ones in this chapter have only been told in recent years, so more modern. And they are stories that young people often tell about dangers we face in our lives today. So as we were discussing earlier, these are things that really did kind of freak us out in like the 90s as well. And if I'm not going to lie, they kind of freak me out today too.
Oh yeah. A couple of these are still like a little bit of stranger danger lingers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of these are stranger danger based.
Yes, absolutely. And our first one is The Hook.
I'm very fond of this story. It's one of the first stories that I think of when I think of this book. It really stuck in my brain as a little kid. I don't know why. It's not like I was like driving to school dances as like a little kid reading this book, but because a lot of the stories in this section are like teens and younger kids, whereas a lot of them in the previous stories are adults. Maybe that's why it freaked me out so much. But this one, the characters are a little older than I was when I first read this story, but we start with our little title page and a very creepy image of like a Captain Hook style hook with like some creepy stuff like dripping off of it. It's not attached to a hand. It's just sitting there very creepily. It's a pretty short story. But it talks about Donald and Sarah, okay, two pals. They went to the movies, they rode in Donald's car, and then they're sitting in their car afterwards, and Donald turns on the radio, and an announcer comes in with a news bulletin, which that in itself is so dated, and a news bulletin on the radio, like, okay, relax. So a murderer had escaped from a local prison, and how he had a knife, but also his left hand was missing, and in its place he wore a hook, which, okay, hilarious. Why would you let your prisoner have a hook? Like, obviously he just like used that bad boy to like unlock the cell door or whatever and just step right out. But okay, that's maybe a conversation for somebody else. Donald and Sarah are sitting in their car hearing about this, and Sarah she's seen a few horror movies because she's like, oh, let's roll up the windows, let's lock the doors. I think maybe we should go home. The prison isn't that far. Like, this guy could be kind of close. And Donald's like, okay, whatever. I mean, it's only 10 o'clock. Let's stay out a little longer. And Sarah's all snippety sassy. And she says, I don't care what time it is. I want to go home. So Donald is in a state of disbelief. And he says, what, he's not going to climb all the way up here? And like, even if he did, all the doors are locked. What's he going to do? Well, sir, let me tell you, I'm sure that the cell door was locked too, but okay, Donald. Sarah says, I want to go home. I'm not dealing, like, I don't like you enough for this. Take me home. So Donald is a bit of a sexist guy. And he says, he's all annoyed and says, girls are always afraid of something. Mm-hmm. The car, Sarah thinks that maybe she hears something scratching at her door a little bit. And she says, did you hear that? It sounded like somebody was trying to get in. And Donald says, oh, sure, you girls are so scared. So soon they get to her house. She's very sweet. She invites him in for a cup of cocoa, which again sounds very dated, but also I love it. I will surely be asking all of my suitors in the future if they would like to have cocoa. Okay. And Donald says, no, I have to go home. So he goes around to the other side of the door to let her out, and hanging on the door handle is a hook. So another one of these stories where the very last line is the creepiest part, and it kind of makes everything else make sense. Like when Sarah says, oh, it sounds like something was scratching on the door. And so I really like stories that do that. And I found this one very creepy and weird. Mm-hmm. So looking at it now as an adult, there are a lot of unanswered questions that I have.
Yeah. Like, why was Sarah dating Donald?
Yeah. Donald doesn't seem like a great guy. He like doesn't believe anything that she says, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Also, sorry. Like, part of me was wondering, was he getting dragged by the car? Like, did he hook his hook over the door and then they're just driving, dragging him, and then it, you know, pops off? Like, well, guess it wasn't all that good.
I bet you that's exactly what happened. How else would it have just popped right off?
Yeah. I bet you they were dragging him.
That's terrifying. That adds like a whole other layer.
Then it becomes a horror movie for him because.
Yeah.
Roles reversed.
Yes. And totally, speaking of horror movies, I kept getting like both Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer vibes from this one. Which I Know What You Did Last Summer in particular just super freaked me out, like as a kid when I was watching, you know, my scary stories. So I didn't like it at all.
I didn't like it.
But I like that it reminded me of that.
Mm.
Yeah. And the interesting thing too about like the image of the hook, in my copy, there's like, it's almost like a shadow, and it kind of looks like there's a hook and then the shadow of the hook, and it almost looks like it's in a creepy graveyard or something. Like it's just kind of sticking out.
It super does.
Mm-hmm. Creepy.
You know creepy what else images. Is creepy? You know what else is creepy? The image of this white satin evening gown.
Oh my gosh, right? You can see like a foot dangling and a dressy shoe, but then the other leg, it's just missing a foot, and it's like those little vines coming down again. And then you can vaguely kind of make out like a ghostly image of like a boat or something. It almost looks like the Titanic. Oh, and you know what? It looks like there's the hook on the boat too. I didn't notice that before.
Oh,
that's funny, the way the shadow makes it sit like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost looks like she has shoulders and like arms and cleavage. Yeah.
And she's the king of the world.
Just no head.
Yeah, no head. No head indeed. Yeah, this image is kind of spooky. And the longer I look at it too, it gets even spookier. Ooh.
Like, so, it doesn't look like an empty dress.
It doesn't. Yeah. Like, it looks like there's...
It doesn't hang like that, you know?
Yeah.
The neckline is too rigid.
Mm-hmm. And like, the Titanic vibes are just too real. Because I feel like it's... I don't know if it's even meant to look like that, but that's just what keeps coming to mind for me is the Titanic.
Okay, Leonardo.
I'll never let go. You let go. He drowned in the Atlantic. Way to go. Anyway, I'll never get over that either. There was enough room at the door for both of you bros.
It is true.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big door.
Yeah, justice for Jack. Anyway, so the white satin evening gown. A young woman is asked to a dance by a young man, but she lives in poverty and she can't afford a dress. Her mother suggests that perhaps she can rent a dress, so she goes to a local pawn shop, finds a beautiful white satin evening gown, and the pawn shop agrees to loan it to her for just a little bit of money. She looks absolutely stunning, and lots of folks come up to talk to her because she looks just so incredible in this dress. She's having so much fun dancing the night away, but then she begins to feel sick and dizzy and decides to go home. The next day, her mother finds her dead in her bed, so of course an autopsy is performed. The coroner finds traces of embalming fluid inside of her, and upon further examination, they also find traces of embalming fluid on the dress. She was poisoned. An undertaker had dropped off the dress to the pawn shop after finishing up the funeral of another young woman. This is completely creepy on so many levels. There's also big necrophilia vibes with this one. I am not here for that at
all. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because like, how did he get the dress? Like, I wonder if, like, I'm just, yeah.
She's just buried without clothing now.
Yeah,
it's like rude. In her socks.
Gross.
It's
yeah.
Super not cool.
Yeah, and I also like totally understand because like the skin is the biggest organ, of course, so it just like absorbed into her skin. But
I wouldn't work like that though.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if do you guys watch Ask a Mortician with Caitlin Doughty, or is that just a thing I watch because I'm weird? Okay, well, it's awesome channel. She does a lot of really cool stuff. Embalming chemicals can be dangerous, but they're more likely to be like carcinogenic. And that's, you know, a hazard for people who work as embalmers. So they, you know, wear all the stuff, but it's not likely to kill you in like one day.
That was like, totally my question too, because I feel like you would hear about more sick, deaths. Yeah.
But like not during the course of like one evening, you probably wouldn't notice it. Even if it was in high doses, you might get a little lightheaded. Mm-hmm. I think from the chemicals if you're being exposed to them without anything, but I don't think it would kill you after just like wearing the dress the one time.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's
good. Things I know.
Good to know, because I was feeling a little scared about the fact that I'd buy like used clothes all the time.
Right.
On shop, but I don't know. There's a huge difference between consignment stores and pawn shop.
Also, Formaldehyde and chemicals used in embalming are not odorless. Like,
right.
And they're not a subtle smell.
Right. Like I feel like you would notice it.
You definitely would. All those guys flirting with her are going to be like, what is that perfume?
She looks great, but don't get too close because she smells awful.
Like, you smell like a high school bio lab. What that's about?
Yeah, it doesn't smell good. I don't want to be around you. Yeah. And I just have other questions too. Like, why did the undertaker steal the dress just to take it to a pawn shop? And if the pawn shop owner knew that, like, the story of this dress, why did he, like, take the dress? And also, how did, like, the girl's family not know about it? Like, the deceased girl, like, unless he dug her back up, like, if it was just, if she wasn't in a mausoleum, like,
yeah, was it like a closed casket?
Right, because I feel like even with a closed casket, usually like immediate family will sometimes look in. Because we've had some services in my family like that too, where like the immediate family has the option to like look, but then it's like closed for everybody else just based on just wishes and that kind of thing too. So did he do it like as the coffin was being placed into the hearse to go to the cemetery? But that doesn't make sense either, because like at least in the funerals I've been to, there's like a huge line of cars and like the pallbearers, like the body isn't left alone like after the funeral.
Also, like dressing and undressing a corpse is not an easy thing. Yeah. Like if you've ever tried to dress a toddler, it's like that but bigger and heavier, and they're not doing anything to help. To the point where, again, another Eskimortician fact, a lot of times what they'll actually do is instead of dressing them entirely, they'll cut the back of the clothing so they only have to like pull it on the front and it's not really attached in the back for a lot of them for viewing is what they'll do because it's just so much easier. So, you know, you'll cut your suit or your shirt down the back and then they'll just pull it on the front and then lean you back.
Oh, that makes so much sense too, because I feel like a lot of times there's like things in the casket as well. Like, of course, there's the pillow. Yeah. I don't know if you can tell, but I've been to a lot of funerals, sadly. I have trauma.
And the way I deal with it is I like knowing about things. I like learning facts about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I know a lot of weird facts about the funeral industry.
Yeah.
And if you also want to know weird facts about the funeral industry, ask a mortician. Great YouTube channel, Caitlin Doty. She's also a published author if you want to read her book. She's got a couple of them, but my favorite is Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory.
Yeah, Meg, who used to work here, she loves that author as well. She's recommended her to me many, many times. I need to take her up on that. Or I can just ask a Kelsey.
And yeah, I probably know the answer, honestly. Yes,
absolutely.
I've watched all of her videos, many of them multiple times, just because I find it fascinating.
But it is really fascinating.
Dressing and undressing a corpse is not a one-person job, mm-hmm. and it is not a quick thing to do. So, like, this guy devoted some time.
So many questions. Was it that fancy about this story?
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it too. And like, would there be that much embalming fluid on it? Like, because as you were saying, you'd have to
unless somebody did a really bad job.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here's a not fun, not super fun fact. Leakage is the thing. So
yes. Oh, so like, oh, so how long had it?
Like, so leakage is the thing. Your holes, your body holes.
Right.
Leak sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the back of the dress might have had some leakage.
But wouldn't you have like noticed?
It's a white dress, gal.
It's a white dress too. It's a so white. Like, I mean, they do things. They seal things, but leakage is always a worry mm-hmm. if you don't do things correctly.
Right.
So, I don't know. This undertaker doesn't sound like he does things correctly, just from what we know about him.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, thank you for the mortician insight too.
Sorry, that was weird.
It wasn't weird at all. It was actually really helpful because like you actually answered some of the questions that came to mind because I was like, yeah, this story is really creepy, but I have questions.
Yeah. How logic is this creepy?
Yeah.
Partially logic.
Yeah, and it's really funny too that I picked the story because I just made a link in my head. So my favorite book growing up, like my absolute favorite one, I have no idea why, it was called Prom Dress by a woman named Lael Lit Kay, and she was a horror author, and it was about like this haunted dress. And I'm wondering if that, if she sought inspiration from that as well, because it was like doom would kind of befall like the wearers of this dress, but that dress was haunted, so it was a little bit different than like formaldehyde. Yeah. But it's really interesting that I picked the story out of the stories that were left. I literally did not make that connection until this moment.
Well, poison clothes goes like all the way back to like the Greeks and the Medea myth, you know.
Yeah,
with the, she gives a poison dress to Jason's wife. Mm-hmm. Jason was supposed to marry her, so.
Yeah, and this is totally off topic, but while we're talking about the subject of poisoning, I'm in a like a couple of writing groups on Facebook, and one of the things they posted was one of those like pots from medieval times where like you could put poison in one part and then your regular tea so you can like trick your enemy. Like, see, I'm drinking it too. It was fascinating.
I remember that. Yeah, the assassin's teapot, and you like you click a little thing when you're pouring it.
Yep.
Donovan, my fiance, really wants to own one of those. He's like, can I put that on our wedding registry?
Yes. Yes.
I'm would for you it. Like
Coke, Diet Coke, Pepsi? Hope you don't get the poison one.
You want caffeine or decaf?
Perfect. All right. So our next story is High Beams.
Okay. This is another story that I think about really, it comes to mind very quickly when I think of this book. It's another one that I just remember really well. What is it with me and teens and cars? I don't know. Maybe I was just a very creeped out teen whenever I had to drive late at night, and I still kind of am.
Oh, same.
Yeah. I really like getting off work in the evening and that nice, fun drive down the dark, creepy back roads in the fall time. I love that. But like when I'm driving on the highways and just like more city-like areas, I get very creeped out and I'm constantly looking behind me to see if there's a man crouched behind my seat with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Same. Might be because of this story.
spoiler. You know how to solve that one.
Yeah.
Fill your backseat with random crap you don't need.
Perfect. I have that problem also, but I'm still looking back all the time. Just like, what if he's on top of the random crap? Like, it's not, it's not a logical thing at this point.
No, so I have some story. List. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, I still have stuff that I haven't unloaded from when I moved here in April. Like, I have some deconstructed bookshelves and stuff.
Me too, dude. I have stuff that I haven't unloaded since I moved in August, and that's definitely less time, but I'm still looking in my car like, do we need this in here? No. Take it up to the place of residence, and then I won't do it. So at this point, it's just going to stay in there forever. So...
That's fine.
It's fine. So this story is about a gal who goes to a basketball game at her high school, and she's driving home, and she only lives about 8 miles away, and she lives on a farm. So that offends me because I also grew up on a farm very close to my school and to the library. So she sounds like me and I hate it. Okay. So she's on her way home, and she notices that this red pickup truck is following her for a while, and it's nighttime, so he's got his lights on behind her. And so she's kind of passing other cars and like, you know, moving around through the roads, and he's following her very, you know, closely behind her. So it's a little creepy. And then suddenly he turns on his high beams and leaves them on for almost a minute, which usually indicates that the person in front of you is going way too slow and that you're a jerk. So she's thinking, well, maybe he just wants to pass me or something, but he's not passing. He's just flashing the lights. And then he finally turns them off. He turns them back on. She's getting very creeped out. And she's thinking, this person's following me and trying to antagonize me. So she drives a little faster and the truck is staying right behind her. He keeps turning her cars on, his lights on a bunch of times and flooding her car with light. And then she finally gets to the farm and jumps out of the car and runs to the house and screams, "Call police," at her father. And then out in the driveway, she could see the driver of the truck and he has a gun in his hand. So it's all getting very creepy. The police arrive and they go to arrest him, but he points at the girl's car and says, "You don't want me, you want him." Very dramatic. Okay. So they look in the girl's car and behind the driver's seat is a man with a knife. So then the book kind of explains what was happening. So as the driver of the truck explained it, he saw this man slip into the girl's car just before she left the school. And he couldn't really do much. Maybe he was like across the parking lot or something and wouldn't have gotten to her in time. So he hops really quickly into his truck and he thought about getting the police, but was afraid to leave her. Bro, you could have called the police, but whatever. So he follows her car. And each time the man in the back seat reaches up to overpower the girl driving, the driver of the truck behind them would turn on his high beams so that the man would drop back down, afraid that someone might see him doing it. So super creepy, has haunted me forever. Whenever I'm in a dark car, I'm like, what's behind me? It's stories a lot, but I really like it.
Yeah. And it's wild to me too, that like this story from 1981 is, it really does still resonate in 2022. Like I know for me, I'm always checking behind me to see if like someone is following me, and I'll make some weird turns to like kind of prove that. And the advice my parents always gave me was, if you think someone's following, when you're making your weird turns, if they are actually following you, just head toward the police station and then park in the lot there, and they'll usually leave you alone. So I've never had to go that far, but I have had someone that was following me before, and it was a late shift in one of my previous houses that I lived in. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. So that's like terrifying to me.
Yeah, when I'm running and I notice that like the same car has passed me and then turned around and passed me again, I get very creeped out. And sometimes it's not like I'm looking at the plate, so I don't know. But if I see a very similar looking car, I think like, was that the same car? I'm not sure. It could have been. And sometimes it's happened once or twice where I'm fully convinced that it's the same car. Mm-hmm. A couple of times. That's very creepy.
That's terrifying. Oh, I hate it. Hate it, yeah. hate it.
And it's creepy that it's just some guy. It's not a ghost or a monster or anything. It's, mm-hmm. One of those stories, which, this whole section kind of is, that could plausibly happen.
Yeah. But way to go for the Good Samaritan guy.
I know, the guy who weirdly, didn't call the police, but was like, yeah, I thought about it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's fine.
This is probably like a no cell phones in my pocket kind of time.
That's what true. I would
think too. Because it does say in the story that he thinks about going to get the police, but then it's like
how he'd either have to go and get them or like go into a building and call. Mm-hmm. So like it makes a little more sense that he's like, I didn't want to let that situation out of my sight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that puts it into much better perspective, because if you can't tell, I've fully inserted myself into the story. I'm the gal driving and I hate it. So I kind of forgot that we're in 1982. And actually the story was probably first told even a little bit before that.
Mm-hmm. And Shelby, I got to tell you too, when I was reading this one, I actually thought of you too, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is Shelby's life right now.
Driving down like a creepy back road.
Yeah, because it can be like, it's also really cool to like drive down the back roads in Heartland at night, but it's also really spooky. Like it's really spooky in Heartland.
Yeah, we are not a big city.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So the streetlights, especially once you get away from Heartland Road, where mm-hmm. they can be pretty sparse.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that during the holidays when everyone's got their winter lights out, gorgeous.
Oh, I bet.
Through a little like community area on my way home, like a little subdivision or whatever, just to like check out the lights. It's really nice.
It's awesome.
Anyways,
our next one is The Babysitter.
another very creepy one that
still
hit you today.
This one is very like, this one is very, I see it in so many horror movies, this trope. So we got Doreen, and she is babysitting three different people, Richard, Brian, and Jenny. And somebody calls on the telephone, which of course it's the 80s or earlier, so it's on the wall. And she answers and doesn't say anything. Guy just like laughs a lot and then hangs up. And one of the kids is like, who was that? And Doreen's just like, some nut, what I miss. And I just love that, some nut.
That's so cute.
I love how she's like, some nut. Makes it sound kind of cute. She answers it again, and it's the same guy. He says, I'll be there soon. And then he like, ha, laughs and hangs up. And the children are like, who's that? And she's just like, it's a crazy person. And then like sits back down. Doreen has so much chill in this until like the very last moment. So he calls again and he's like, I'll be there in an hour. To like the kid, and the kid's like, what does he mean? And Doreen's just like, ignore him. And then he's like, I'll be there in 30 minutes, mwahaha. And Doreen's like, why are you doing this? So we finally see some emotion from Doreen, because she's just been super chill. And she goes, okay, I'll go ahead and call the operator. And she says, operator, where's this guy calling from? And the operator says, that person is calling from the telephone upstairs. You better leave. I'll get the police. And then the upstairs door opens and a stranger starts running after them, chasing after them. But the police get there in time. So this is definitely like, this happens in Scream. This happens in however many other horror movies. There's also just very much a babysitter at home without the parents trope too. I know that like you're already, if you're babysitting at someone else's home, you're a little bit off because it's not your environment, but you're supposed to be in control of it. So it definitely plays on like that sort of insecurity.
Yeah, absolutely.
See a lot.
Did you two ever, I was not a babysitter ever, but did you guys ever babysit and have something weird happen where you were like, oh, scary stories. This is my life right now.
Yeah, mine was, I'm the oldest sibling, so I tended to babysit a lot. And even just in my neighborhood, I was kind of seen as the responsible one. So that that's a whole nother story. But yeah, I was often left in charge of kids, like even when I was a kid. And I do remember one time I was watching like Unsolved Mysteries or something, and it was about something really similar to the story, and I ended up like calling my parents, who were at a function, like a fancy function. I was like, get home, you gotta go home, there's like a thing on the loose or whatever. So yeah, it was terrifying, but
oh, that's so cute and sad.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah,
scary. I still remember that too. Gotta say too, like especially because this was written in the 80s, the point where kids assume that the person upstairs is, like kids that are reading it today might assume they were using a cell phone, but it seems like they were actually calling from like a separate line. So these people had two separate phone lines, which means that they were rich. Because at least all the people I knew, we only had one phone line, but we might have like multiple phones around the house. So like if you picked up the phone, you could just hear whomever was talking like to their friend, and then you'd like scream at your brother to like get off the phone because you're talking to someone. Not that that ever happened to me before.
Oh, never ever.
But I was thinking this had to be a pretty wealthy house. Well, and they had an upstairs too, so it's funny to me that that's like, that's wealthy. You have like made it. You have two floors and you have two phone lines. Good for you, man. So that was my takeaway.
Yeah. I was also the oldest, and so would babysit my siblings all the time, but I also babysat for a couple of other houses in the neighborhood and one from an like nearby town where the rich people lived. So I did babysit some rich kids once. How I define rich, which is probably not how everyone is. But like, I, even when it was at my own home, I hate being on the first floor of a building at night because I'm just worried that a face is going to pop up like in the windows. It just, it's like one of my big fears. I would just not, even to this day, I don't like sleeping on the first floor of a building. Just, I feel like somebody's going to come in, at least if I'm on the second floor, I should hear them pulling up a ladder, right? Or something like that. But yeah, I know there were definitely times when I was like babysitting and after the kids had gone to sleep and it's just so quiet and you're in a strange house, it's just like the anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And it's funny too that you mentioned about sleeping on the first floor. So like with my apartments, I tend to like living on a floor higher than the first floor because it's like you have to like work to like sneak into the window and somebody's probably going to see you doing that. So yeah, it's funny though, because I don't like living on ground levels or at least sleeping on ground levels either. And I think that's part of it. Like I'm afraid someone's going to crawl in the window. And
that wraps up this week's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to check us out next week as we tell you about what we thought of part 5. Until then, stay spooky.